The trading floor is closed. It's time to cut through the chatter and find the clarity. From the studios of Farm Journal Broadcast, this is AgriTalk After the Bell. Here's your host, Chip Flory.
Hey, welcome to AgriTalk After the Bell, everyone. I am your host, Chip Flory. We are live at the Commodity Classic in Anaheim, California. Thank you so much to AMVAC, our sponsor, for making it possible for us to bring you coverage here from the Commodity Classic. Really appreciate being down here. Kind of an active day so far. The dollar was higher, corn was higher, soybeans higher, but soybean meal was the one leading the way in the soy complex. And Davis, it looks like we've got some of that money flow going again in the soy complex with bean oil closing lower today. So obviously long meal, short oil spreading going on in that market again. Winter wheat was higher, spring wheat, it looked like they were mixed at the close. Live cattle was higher, feeder cattle saw solid gains in lean hogs. Let's call it mixed in the lean hog market today. Mm-hmm. You know, what's going on in these markets, Davis, it's all pretty important, but there was some big news that came out of Washington today. We broke it on AgriTalk. Well, tell us what happened.
Well, I have it right here. Senate confirms Northey for USDA undersecretary position. The Senate today confirmed by voice vote Bill Northey to be Undersecretary of Agriculture for Farm and Foreign Agricultural Services, making the end of a lengthy hold on his nomination over a biofuel policy dispute by Senator Ted Cruz, Republican from Texas. Cruz used a hold as he pressed for high-level negotiations over the Renewable Fuel Standard, or RFS, and proposed changes to RINs. The move coincides with today's White House meeting on U.S. biofuel policy.
Okay, so...
That's our guy, Bill Northey, baby.
That's our guy, Bill Northey. That's right. So the timing of the whole thing was really kind of shocking, because just as that meeting was starting at the White House, the Senate voted to approve Bill Northey as the USDA undersecretary. So the timing of that, my first thought was, oh my gosh, they got some Cruz got signed some kind of a compromise on the RFS. Mm-hmm. But after the meeting broke up at the White House, Senator Chuck Grassley, who was there, put out a tweet that said no deal reached. No, basically what he was saying was no changes. So now I'm thinking the only way that Grassley was going to be a part of that meeting and hear what Cruz had to say was if Cruz lifted the hold on Northey and they got and they could get the vote done first.
Right.
So I mean, there's either some kind of a little compromise going on here, or Grassley put his foot down and said, "You've had your meeting at the White House already once, Ted. If we're going to meet again, you pull the hold on Northey right now, and then we'll let this meeting go forward."
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it was an exciting day, no question. And congratulations to a much deserving Bill Northey on the approval in the Senate. Hey, we got a lot to cover. What happened in the markets?
Well, Chip, the U.S. dollar index opened lower but quickly reversed course to trade higher on the day. The spot month index triggered short covering on the move through last week's high on the way to a test of resistance at the February high near 90.50. USDA says 49% of the Kansas wheat crop is in poor to very poor condition. That's a 5-point increase from the end of last month. In Oklahoma, 78% of the HRW crop is in poor to very poor condition. That leaves just 12% of the Kansas crop and just 4% of the Oklahoma wheat crop in good to excellent condition. Yikes.
Yeah, you know what? I know somebody watches what's going on with that wheat crop pretty closely. It's Arlen Suderman, the chief commodities economist at FC Stone. He's my guest on the show today. We'll see what Arlen thinks about the wheat crop conditions coming up here in a bit.
Well, May hard red futures liked it, 11.25 cents higher there at 504.75. May soft red firmed 4.25 to 4.77. May spring wheat was off 3.5 cents at 609.75. Chip, the string of corn export sales continued this morning when USDA announced the sale of 130,000 metric tons of U.S. corn for delivery to an unknown destination in the current marketing year. On the supply side of the market, pro farmer South American consultant Dr. Michael Cordonier from Soybean and Corn Advisor cut another 1 million metric tons from his Argentine corn crop estimate. That puts his crop peg at 36 million tons. He also made no change to his Brazilian corn crop estimate of 86 million tons.
You know, that 36 million ton estimate, that might still be a little high according to some of the guys that are putting crop estimates out there. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about the impact of that coming up in a bit.
March corn futures were 2 cents higher to 370 and one half. July corn was up 2 cents at 387. December corn closed at $4 even, up a penny on the day, Chip. Soybean meal futures once again led bean prices to the upside, with crop watchers continuing to trim bushels from the Argentine bean crop. Pro farmer consultant Dr. Cordonier cut 2 million from his Argentine bean crop estimate, dropping his peg to 47 million metric tons. He also notes that he continues to have a downside bias on the Argentine bean crop. Dr. C also left his Brazilian bean crop estimate unchanged at 113 million metric tons. Unchanged there, too.
Yeah, you know what? It feels like he's not low enough on the Argentine crop and not high enough on the Brazilian crop.
Oh.
But that's kind of where the market is standing right now. We'll talk to Arlen about that in a bit.
Yep. Well, March soybean futures were up 3.5 cents to 1049 and one half. July beans gained 3.25 to 1058 and one half. November soybeans closed at 1032 even, up 1.5 cents on the day. On the livestock side, after four consecutive lower closes in live cattle futures, short covering helped to lift prices today. Today's gains were important after the April contract yesterday tested support at the short-term uptrend drawn off the late January and February price lows. April cattle, 25 cents higher at 124.25. June cattle firmed 15 to 116.35. March feeders added a buck even to 146.55. On the snout side, slightly higher cash hog bids and spillover support from the cattle market helped lean hog futures work to the upside early in today's trade, but futures were unable to hang on. April lean hogs were unchanged at 69.65 all told, and June hogs fell 27.5 cents to 82.02 and one half, Chip.
All right. Thank you very much, Davis.
You bet.
Let's go to the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, get a feel from the floor from Joe Vaklovic with Standard Grain. Joe, what'd you think of today's price performance? That soybean meal market really looks strong again.
Yeah, this is, you know, it's all about uncertainty in Argentina. We've known that for a while. And I suppose that analysts are walking back production prospects even further this week. So that's what's driving that market. I still have big concerns regarding exports, as does everybody. How are we going to, you know, shave bushels off that carryout? Because it appears to me as if the bean carryout is probably growing and not shrinking, for the U.S. at least.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's probably the case. It almost feels like we need more crush capacity, doesn't it, Joe? I mean, because if we had the crush capacity, we'd be using it.
That's exactly what we need this year, and we don't have it. So we're going to do some extra crush, no doubt about it. The margins are great, but the exports are a big, big, big problem.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, 4 days down in a row in live cattle, got a bit of a bump today. Can we get some gains on top of it the rest of the week?
I feel like this is a familiar situation we find ourselves in. You get a bearish cattle on feed over Monday, then higher Tuesday. So, you could very well see a recovery here. I think the box beef market's been great. We had a consolidation in choice boxes from 200 to 210 for a few weeks, and we're close to the 220, I think, here today. So, looking much better there.
Yeah, no question about it. Hey, Joe, thanks, buddy. We'll talk to you again next week, all right?
Yep, have fun out there.
Hey, you know I will. You know I will. And out here is in Anaheim, California. We are at the 2018 Commodity Classic again. Thank you to AMVAC for making it possible for us to bring you coverage live from the Commodity Classic this year. Okay, in the news, we talked about Northey. We talked about the potential implications that that might have for the RFS. We talked about Argentine production, Brazilian production, wheat crop conditions. The guy that's coming up next, we can talk about all of that, and we're going to do it. That is next on AgriTalk After the Bell with Arlen Suderman from International FC Stone.
And it's time for an industry spotlight here at Commodity Classic. We're sponsored today by AMVAC, and with me is Jim Lappin, who's crop marketing manager for corn and soybeans. And Jim, as we look right behind us, you can see you're going to save guys $3 an acre. Tell us about it.
Well, you know, when growers come to Commodity Classic, they're always looking for production ideas, way they can be more efficient, way they can be more effective. What's the combination of inputs they can choose and manage to get the ultimate best return on their investment? But with commodity prices where they are, they're also looking for a way, can they save some money? So we have a broad portfolio of both granular and liquid insecticides, as well as corn herbicides, Impact and Impact Z. So we've launched a new rebate program where if a grower is using one of our insecticides that fits his farm, whether it's a granular or liquid, to control those corn rootworm or seed attacking pests, to manage that risk, but then combine that with the power of our Impact or Impact Z herbicide, he can earn a $3 per acre rebate.
Yeah, and you've really designed this so they've got a lot of flexibility in the tools that they've got available.
Absolutely. With Impact, flexibility is really the key. He can be apply any time from weeds emerged up to 45 days before harvest with Impact. With Impact Z is targeted at the early post segment. So get out there, control those glyphosate-resistant weeds. Impact and Impact Z both offer really good grass knockdown with or without glyphosate. So, again, it gives a grower more flexibility when he's putting those options together to control his problem weeds.
So it's buy two, get $3 off. Where can growers find more about that?
Grower can go to buy2save3.com and get all the details.
All right, again, that's buy2save3.com. And if you buy a qualifying granular or liquid insecticide, pair it with Impact or Impact Z, you're going to save $3 an acre on that rebate. Jim Lappin, Crop Marketing Manager for Corn and Soybeans, our guest today on this Industry Spotlight. I'm John Harris.
Where do you turn to protect your bottom line? It's time you turn to ProFarmer for easy-to-follow market news and advice for both cash marketers and futures and options users. Visit TryProFarmer.com today for a no-obligation four-week trial to the nation's number one marketing newsletter. That's TryProFarmer.com. ProFarmer is not a brokerage firm, so you're not going to get a lot of in-and-out trading advice or elaborate option strategies. You will get rock-solid fundamental market outlook and recommendations that farmers have relied on for generations. Stop sifting through mountains of confusing analysis. ProFarmer selects only the most important news to save you time and keep you focused on what really matters. Make better informed marketing decisions to protect your bottom line. Try the ProFarmer newsletter absolutely free. Visit TryProFarmer.com. That's TryProFarmer.com.
Market Rally is brought to you by Corvus Pre-Emergence Corn Herbicide, America's preferred choice.
And welcome back to AgriTalk After the Bell, everybody. I'm your host, Chip Flory. We are live at the Commodity Classic out in Anaheim, California, bringing you coverage. Thanks to AMVAC for making that possible so that we can be out here and do that for you. Okay, I mentioned it earlier, corn was higher, soybeans higher. Soybean meal kind of led the way to the upside today. Bean oil was lower, winter wheat higher, spring wheat was mixed. Live cattle, feeder cattle higher, and lean hogs were mixed. Great show planned for you today. We've got Arlen Suderman. Arlen is the chief commodities economist at International FC Stone. Arlen, thanks for joining us here, bud.
It's great to be here. I think it's warmer back home, though. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah, we leave the Midwest, and look what they do to us.
Yeah, they may send us away more often.
Yeah, they send California weather out to the Midwest, and yeah. Midwest weather here. It's crazy, no doubt. Arlen, I know that you guys spent a lot of time and a lot of effort tracking what's going on down in South America. So I want to start there. The narrative all year long has been, yeah, we're losing some bushels of beans out of Argentina. We're losing some bushels of corn out of Argentina. But everything that we're losing, we're picking up in Brazil. That seems a little extreme to me now.
Well, I would tend to be in that camp as well. I talked to our Brazilian team earlier today, and they're putting the final numbers on their estimate that'll come out tomorrow.
What's it going to be?
I can't say that. And in fact, they were still putting the final numbers to it, yeah, as well when we talked, so they didn't give me the final number either. But I do expect it to creep a little bit higher and ratchet up. That's kind of the pattern. I think some of the dryness in Rio Grande do Sul is offsetting some of the high yields we're seeing in some other places. So, you know, in any year when a big crop is big, you get those estimates way out ahead, and then they pull back a little bit. And the opposite is true for the short crops like we see in Argentina. So I expect the losses in Argentina to be greater than the gains in Brazil. We're really not going to know what we have in Argentina until the combines get in there, but we do know that they are under stress. What they've gone through the last 30 days has been very significant. They've lacked some of the heat, kind of like what we were in the Midwest. They had heat there in late January, early February. But it still has done quite a bit of damage. All the focus is on soybeans. But, yeah. Corn probably was more vulnerable than the soybeans. That's another story altogether. But we will offset some of it. We're already pulling soybeans to the crushers in Argentina to keep going out of Paraguay.
Right.
Paraguay can then pull out of Rio Grande do Sul. That's one of the ways for Brazil to move surplus soybeans into Paraguay, into Argentina, so to speak, to keep their crushers going. So
yep.
We'll get some of that crush business. You talked about crush capacity. I think with the capacity that we have online, we can increase here another 30 million bushels or so if the business comes. But, you know, look at that weekly export sales report we had last week. We didn't see any panic buying by the end user.
Right.
That really concerns me. We're pricing ourselves out. Argentina is trying to crank out meal with those beans they're getting from Paraguay. Brazil is now cranking out some meal. So how much of that business, I think there's still a question whether we can justify this, but the funds are in it, and you ride it as long as it goes.
Well, in that meal market, Arlen, the way that this thing took off, it obviously the market recognized very quickly that Argentina is a product supplier, not so much a bean supplier to some important importers around the world. As much of a rally as we've seen in the soybean meal market, it feels like it's got to turn into some extra demand for U.S. meal soon, or we've gone too far.
Well, here's a dose of reality. This is the first year when Brazil had leftover soybeans to sell during our season. So as a result, actual shipments and sales are even worse, but actual shipments of soybeans as our export season comes to an end trail the seasonal pace hit USDA's target by about 120 million bushels.
Right.
So just getting that back would get us to USDA's target with that 530 million bushel target.
Carry
so
over.
We have to pick up another 100 million bushels plus 30 million a crush just to get where USDA's at 530. That
Good
doesn't
grief.
Mean we're going to $8 beans, because the reality is in the market, a bushel of beans, a bushel of corn is worth what the market perceives it to be worth. And the fund managers I talk to are turning increasingly bullish the grains in 2018. Now, maybe they'll get knocked back down, but right now they do, and I hate to use the word bullish around farmers because they think I've said $6 corn, $15 soybeans. I'm certainly not saying that. But that fund money does make a difference, even to the cash market. And so that perception is higher. And so I think our expectations do need to go up for 2018, even with the larger carryout for soybeans.
Okay. All right. You know, last week when the word came that Argentina crushers were bringing some beans in from Paraguay, I flashed back to it was the 95-96 marketing year. I know you'll remember this, when ADM moved some corn from its ethanol division over to its processing division. And that reallocation of the supply that we had, that marked the top. And I'm a little concerned that the reallocating of supplies that South America is doing right now might signal that we've gone far enough.
And the market does work.
Yes.
And I think it's very important for our listeners to understand and remember, painfully so, that weather markets end before you think they should.
Yes.
And they end before you know. They end when it's most bullish, just like bearish markets end at the put a bottom in when it's most bearish, weather markets when it's most bullish. And so that means you don't just wait here and wait to do your pricing. You keep scaling in. You know what your break-evens are. And when you get opportunities, and there's lots of tools out there now, some of the over-counter products that many of the grain companies have, including those who do business with us, that allow you to keep the top side open, get some more top side, but still lock in that floor in that market. And it just makes sense to be taking advantage of some of those tools.
Well, I was just going to say, since you're mentioning it, I got to believe that you're thinking 10/30 new crop beans, probably a pretty good pricing opportunity.
Oh, when I look at ending stocks, even with this, I'm still looking at ending stocks above 500. If this drought tends to be not as bad as we think, it's higher. And then when we look at the increase in acreage for this coming year here in the United States, and some of our numbers that we're getting in now suggest maybe a larger shift to soybean acres than what's commonly being thought right now. And then it comes down to growing season weather, of course. I'm not saying that I'm a bear soybeans, but I don't see a sustained rally in soybeans once we get past this spring's weather threat.
Enough of a shift to soybean acres that March 29 could be kind of a shock?
It really could. It really could, based on the numbers that we're seeing internally right now. And, of course, the market then does its job. And right now it's trying to buy bean acres, and our numbers would suggest that it's doing that. And that's good for corn long term.
How many? What do you think we're at?
Well, we're about to release our numbers, so I'm not going to give you a scoop here on the show.
Will you call me tomorrow or something?
Yeah, we'll talk tomorrow. Those numbers will be out tomorrow. And so it will be an increase that I think makes it hard to sustain this. Unless the key here on Argentina is above or below 45 million metric tons. I think below 45 million metric tons is more significant, brings more money into this market, gives more opportunity.
Okay. So that sets up the next question. Are we under 45 million tons in Argentina?
I'm not ready to go there now. Right now I'm around 46, 47. If you look at some of the analog years of rainfall patterns and temperatures, they got about a 10% break, and that would suggest somewhere around that 47, 48 million metric ton. Looking at analog years and rainfall patterns and temperatures to predict production is somewhat risky.
Yep.
But I'm a little bit conservative in going down too far too low. Because with soybeans, they're hard to guess yield. You know done the tour so many years here in the U.S. Midwest, and soybean yields are very hard. They'll surprise you in either direction.
That's right.
We could be way above that. We could be way below that.
Right. No doubt about it. One thing that we don't talk a lot about on the show anymore, but I've had a couple of people ask me here at Commodity Classic, they've still got some old crop beans in the bin. Here we are up at contract highs. Do we need to move them, or do we use one of those tools that, we can move them, lock in a price, put in a price floor, but leave the upside open?
The opportunity for the soybean market, because I can show from history that when the funds grab a hold of market, they can take it $1 to $2 above what's justified, and the opposite is true as well. So I'd never sit here and say it won't go there, but from a fundamental standpoint, treat it like a business, and from a business decision, when you get the opportunity to lock in some opportunities to grow equity in the farm, you do it. You use some of the tools to keep your upside open, and then you go on, you're satisfied, and you move on.
Is 2018 one of those years where that leave the upside open tag that we put on there is more important than usually?
Yeah, it is. And I was having a conversation with a fund manager earlier today. A lot of them have a more optimistic attitude. I'm not saying $6 corn, but right. It just means that they're more eager to buy the breaks. They're more eager to grasp a hold of a story, to take the market higher. And I can show history shows that that also affects cash price as well.
Absolutely. We're talking with Arlen Suderman from FC Stone on today's show. When we come back, like I said at the top of the show, there's not many people that keep track of what's going on with that wheat crop better than what Arlen does. So we'll see what Arlen thinks. What are we going to do for this year's wheat crop? That's next on ATB.
Oh, Ed, see the headlines?
Yep. Credenz soybeans are designed using smart genetics.
Look, state-of-the-art breeding advances the best germplasm.
Plus, tailored varieties for any field conditions with choice in herbicide-tolerant traits.
And Credenz soybeans come backed by Bayer's ongoing innovation.
Want increased yields and ROI? Plant the smarter soybean.
Talk to an authorized Credenz retailer or discover the right Credenz variety at credenz.bayer.us.
Always read and follow label instructions.
What makes SO4 the smart sulfur source? Superior solubility for delivering sulfur and calcium when the plant needs it throughout the entire growing season. Other sulfur sources release too quickly or too slowly, failing to meet the crop's full needs. SO4 is also pH neutral, so it won't acidify the soil like those other sulfur sources. As you can see, SO4 is the smart sulfur source. Talk to your agronomist or learn more at calciumproducts.com.
It's time for After the Bell's Tech Talk. Pro Farmer Senior Economist Dan Vaught joins us. Dan, what's the market move that matters the most today, bud?
Hey, Jeff, I'm looking at May soybean meal futures today. The prospect of greatly reduced Argentine meal exports in the coming months has powered a major soybean meal rally. The May future had dipped a four-month low at $314 per ton on January 12th, but it leapt higher over the next 6 weeks, reaching $387.90 at last Tuesday's high. It then traded sideways lower, seeming to have run out of gas. But the latest news triggered another big rise today, with the close at $390 topping last week's high. A person could very easily interpret recent price action as a huge bull flag formation, with today's rise potentially marking the start of a big follow-through. But I would warn that it's already technically overbought, thereby suggesting vulnerability to a quick reversal.
Man, that meal market, it is a leader. We've got to keep a real close eye on what's going on there. Thanks, Dan. That is Pro Farmer Senior Economist Dan Vaught.
Are you paying too much for fuel and fertilizer? Verify you're getting the best price with Inputs Monitor from Farm Journal Media. Knowing the low, average, and high price quotes from dealers in your area for fertilizers and farm fuels can save you thousands of dollars. Inputs Monitor gives you an easy, anonymous method to compare fertilizer and fuel prices from across the Midwest. Plus, get grower-focused buying advice, local pricing charts, industry news, and purchase alerts so you don't miss any critical buying opportunities. Visit InputsMonitor.com for subscription information. That's InputsMonitor.com. Unbiased and farmer-focused, Inputs Monitor is the newest and best tool to help growers buy inputs at exactly the right time. Before you book your next fertilizer or fuel contract, verify you're getting a fair price with Inputs Monitor. Learn more at InputsMonitor.com. That's InputsMonitor.com.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our help with your water, your air, your food.
You're going to need our determination, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
Find it now at ShopFarmJournal.com. Brand new to the shop is The Best of Tractor Tales, as seen each week on U.S. Farm Report. This 2-DVD set features dozens of classic machines and the collectors who bring them back to life. You'll get one DVD that's all green, The Best of John Deere. The second DVD includes classics like Alice Chalmers and many more. Buy one DVD for $29.95 or buy the set for $49.95. Order today at ShopFarmJournal.com or call toll-free 877-847-9599. You can find it now at ShopFarmJournal.com.
Today's trading is over. Now it's time to set your strategy for tomorrow. This is AgriTalk After the Bell with Chip Flory.
And welcome back to ATB, everybody. We are live at the Commodity Classic in Anaheim, California. Thanks so much for joining us today. And thanks to AmVac for making our coverage here at the Commodity Classic possible. Talking with Arlen today. Before we get back to the conversation, let's get a recap from Davis.
Did I hear you say it's really hot in there? What, are you working up a sweat there, buddy?
Well, you know, I'm always working.
Yeah. Well, yeah. There's a difference between working and, you know, work until you sweat. Is
no,
there a confirmed
no, not,
sweat
not,
broken?
Not for me, really. No.
All right, that seems about right. May hard red futures were 11 and a quarter cents higher at 504 and three quarters today. Soft red firmed 4 and a quarter to 477. March corn futures were 2 cents higher to 370 and one half. December corn closed at $4 even, pal. That's up a penny today. March soybean futures were up 3.5 cents to 1049 and one half. Novi beans closed at 1032 even, up a penny and a half on the day. On the livestock side, April cattle were 25 cents higher at 124.25, and March feeders added a buck to 146.55. April lean hogs unchanged, 69.65 there. And June hogs down 27.5 cents to 82.02 and one half. There's your quick market recap. Back to you. Surf's up, dude!
Surf's up. Thanks, Davis. Appreciate it. We're talking with Arlen Suderman today. Arlen is the chief commodities economist, International FC Stone. You know, that international on there, Arlen, a lot of the business that you guys do at FC Stone is traditionally has been commercial business, right?
Yes.
But you're bringing in some new products for the farmer.
Yeah, we really are. We see some great opportunities to be an assistance to the farmer. That's always been my heart and passion.
Yep.
From my history and then coming over to INTLFC Stone, it was really hard to leave working for the farmer. And now I'm really excited about this product. It's actually something that was launched in Canada and very successful there, extremely successful. It's called our no-risk program. And in this program, we work with the farmer, hold his hand through the marketing program. You can go into as much detail as possible as you want, but we work all the way from their finances to what their needs are to what their marketing goals are and put together a plan and come to the farm and or talk to them on a regular basis and kind of walk through the program, helping them see it as a business, what we can do to grow their business. Leveraging our connections around the world to give them that information to kind of have confidence in our decisions.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, confidence is what it's all about. When you're pulling the trigger on some sales, I don't care if it's a 5% or a 50%. You got to be confident in what you're doing and understand why you're doing it. Okay, wheat guy, here we go. Kansas 12%, good to excellent. Oklahoma 4%. I mean, how rough is it, Arlen?
Well, remember, wheat is a weed, and so we never know till it gets to March, but we are essentially there now. We are pulling that crop out of dormancy, increasing its moisture requirements and higher temperatures, growth pattern, needing more moisture, and really the maximum yield of that crop is established as before the joint comes out of the ground.
Sure.
And so that's process. After that, we may be able to add spikelets in between in the rows, and then it's the size of the kernel. But yield impact is great now when you put that crop under stress. It is bad. I no longer talk about good to excellent. I talk about the portion that is poor to very poor,
right,
which you've already covered on the show.
Yep.
But when you got half of Kansas and three-fourths of Oklahoma in poor to very poor condition, that doesn't give you a very good foundation, particularly when the forecast doesn't show much opportunity over the next month. Maybe we'll be wrong. Maybe there will be something happen to give us a rain event. A rain event this time of year can make a huge difference. We just don't see it at this time. And that matters to Midwest corn farmers because it's this big supply of low-protein wheat that's sitting there in storage. It's kind of hanging on the corn market, keeping a lid on it.
Yep.
So if we really want to sustain a rally in the corn market, we got to get rid of some of those surplus wheat supplies that are fighting for some feed bunk space. And I think the drought in the Midwest, unfortunately for the farmers in the plains, that drought in the plains may give them opportunity to do that and kind of gives me my better view. I'm more friendly corn than I am anything else going forward.
Really? Okay. That's interesting. Couple of things. We've got to do something about the carry in this wheat market if we're going to move that wheat out of the bin and put it in the feed bunk, and I don't know if we can make anything happen.
Well, thank you, variable storage rate.
Yes.
Yeah.
And now they're talking about it for corn and beans?
Yeah.
What's your thoughts on that for corn and beans? I sure hope they don't do it.
I sure hope not. My good friend Art Barnaby at Kent State University was able to leverage some of his connections and convince the CME group to go that way, hard red winter wheat. He thought it would help, and he talked to me ahead of time, and I said, be careful what you ask for.
Yeah.
And we've certainly seen that play out in the wheat market, and I certainly don't want to see it in corn and soybeans either. The fund managers love it, the elevators love it, the farmers usually gets a short end.
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly right. Okay, these problems that we've got with the hard red winter wheat crop out there, does it matter? Does it matter to the price outlook?
It matters in the environment because the environment we're in where the fund managers want to feel better about the grains, feeling like they've hit multi-year lows, so let's own them. So it makes them... It doesn't make the balance sheet bullish, but it makes them less bearish, and that's all they need. Remember, crude oil in February 2016 put in its low at around $26.50 for WTI, doubled over the next 5 months, even though we were still swimming in crude oil.
Right.
We didn't start reducing stocks until late that year. Well, I'm not going to say we're going to double grain prices, but that's the mentality the fund manager brings to the market. If the worst is behind you, then they're willing to buy. And so that's what they're bringing right now. And so they just need to have some confidence that the worst is behind us, the worst is stocks. And you look at the major exporting countries, it's the United States and Russia that have surplus wheat.
Yep.
Well, in China, but they're not really an exporter.
Right.
So that's where the surplus wheat. So if we can pull down our surplus, that's a big plus to the balance sheet and to allowing prices to move higher at some pace.
You know, it's interesting the comments you made there about the fund managers and yeah, they may be thinking that something that we think is completely unreasonable, a doubling of wheat price, a doubling of corn price. To them, they've seen it happen, so they understand that it can happen again. So here we are with the Dow and stock market in general. We went from that low or no volatility trade to a high volatility trade. Is that part of what's behind that fund manager's attitude towards commodities now?
Yeah, it really is. And with the stock market, there's a little less confidence. You know, for a long time, you couldn't go wrong buying stocks.
Right.
Now there's a little less confidence in that. So where else can our money go and what are the other opportunities? Well, you got bonds, but commodities are starting to look appealing. And a good example is in 2010, we had similar wheat stocks then. Russia was a much smaller exporter, but they were still a significant exporter. They had a drought, and that summer, every day on the news, there was a story about the drought and the fires there. And as a result, Chicago wheat nearly doubled in 5 weeks' time.
Yep.
If we would have got every bushel of their export business, we still would have had a big surplus of wheat.
Yep.
But yet they still almost doubled in that period of time. That's what can happen. It doesn't matter if the fund managers are right or wrong. It's just if they want to buy, then the prices are going to go up. The opposite is true as well. It's a herd mentality, and that's the herd mentality that's starting to develop.
Is there any kind of a bell that rings when they've decided it's time to buy?
They all try to be quiet and be the only ones to do it.
Yeah.
But it's just something we watch as we watch the signals here. And it takes prices higher than what we would expect from a fundamental standpoint. The opposite we certainly saw in recent years as well. But, for example, on corn, we see that it can make 50 cents higher than what you'd expect from a fundamental standpoint or 50 cents lower. So we're not talking $6 corn, but if you say fundamentally corn should be at $3.75, then maybe it takes it to $4.10 to $4.25 instead, that type of a thing. And that can make a huge difference on the farm and making the ends meet and growing some equity.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, so here we are. We're at prices in new crop corn, prices in new crop soybeans. Throw wheat into the mix as well where, yeah, there's a little meat on the bone. We might be able to make a little bit of money at where we're at right now. So go ahead and get started, but I'm going to go back to something that you said in the last segment because I think it's so important. This is one of those years where you go ahead and you use a strategy that's going to leave some upside potential open.
Yeah, certainly so. A business approach to farming. The lifestyle of the farm is second to none, but you got to take a business approach to the farm in order to keep enjoying that lifestyle, to be able to protect it. And, of course, that's why we're starting a no-risk program as well. But I do see some more upside potential long-term for corn. A lot of it's going to hinge on the Safrina corn crop that we have in Brazil, what the size of it is, and then we'll talk about planting conditions here in the United States for the spring and whether La Nina lingers or doesn't linger as we go through the summer.
You got a gut feeling on that?
Well, you know, the models keep saying it's going to end. That one model of CFS version 2 says it's going to linger. It's an outlier model, but it's got a good track record this time of year. That means more to South America and Australia than it does U.S. Midwest.
Right.
U.S. Midwest, that matters, but also sea surface temperatures in the Alaska and Gulf and also off the coast of the Baja of California. Those are two big ones. If you see those sea surface temperatures off the coast of California, the Baja of California, cool, then look out.
Yeah.
Right now they're expected to be normal to a little above normal. There are some cooling tendencies there we'll have to watch.
Okay, we've only got about 30 seconds left, but I'm going to ask you this. Do you like cattle in 2018? Do you like hogs in 2018?
I think it's steady as it goes. I don't want to get overly bullish there, but I think we've got some really solid demand here that's underneath this market, maybe help maintain some margins and keep this expansion under check.
Yeah. You know, and again, I mean, like we were talking about on the grains, we're at some prices right now where you can be profitable on cattle, on hogs. Again, it's one of those markets where you maybe look to be putting in a price floor and do something to leave your upside potential alive as well.
Yeah, and we're seeing a lot more of that take place now.
Yeah, absolutely. Arlen, thank you so much for making the time to come over here. You know, it's always a joy to sit down and talk with you.
I enjoyed it very much. Thank you.
Very good. That is Arlen Suderman, Chief Commodities Economist, INTLFC Stone. Okay, when we come back, I'm going to pull some highlights from that conversation, and who knows, I might find somebody walking around here to have a conversation with. We'll do that next on ATB.
Thank you for calling XYZ Financial. To pay your credit card bill, say, "Hey, Bill." I'm sorry, I couldn't understand you. To speak with an operator, press 0. Gracias por elegir español. Para pagar su factura de tarjeta de crédito.
Your Farm Dog USA assistant won't be able to pay your credit card bill, but he will be able to help around the farm by picking up drop tools, managing your herd, and opening latch gates. Learn more at pharmdog.org.
Where do you turn to protect your bottom line? It's time you turn to Pro Farmer for easy-to-follow market news and advice for both cash marketers and futures and options users. Visit TryProFarmer.com today for a no-obligation four-week trial to the nation's number one marketing newsletter. That's TryProFarmer.com. ProFarmer is not a brokerage firm, so you're not going to get a lot of in-and-out trading advice or elaborate option strategies. You will get rock-solid fundamental market outlook and recommendations that farmers have relied on for generations. Stop sifting through mountains of confusing analysis. ProFarmer selects only the most important news to save you time and keep you focused on what really matters. Make better informed marketing decisions to protect your bottom line. Try the ProFarmer newsletter absolutely free. Visit TryProFarmer.com. That's TryProFarmer.com.
You're going to need me.
You're going to need us.
All of us.
You're going to need our help with your water, your air, your food.
You're going to need our determination, our compassion.
You're going to need the next generation of leaders to face the challenges the future will bring.
And we promise we'll be there when you need us.
Today, 4-H is growing the next generation of leaders. Support us at 4-H.org.
It's time for another industry spotlight. With me once again is Jim Lappin of AMVAC. He's a crop marketing manager for corn and soybeans. And Jim, when we talked earlier in the show, mentioned Impact Z, but it's a new product for you, just getting federal registration. Tell us about it.
Yeah, we're excited to be talking to growers about Impact Z herbicide. It's a new premix of Impact plus atrazine. Many of the growers are familiar with Impact, and they've been using it for excellent crop safety and control of their tough weeds. Impact Z gives them another opportunity to combine the crop safety and flexibility of Impact with atrazine. So it's a premix of the two combinations. When you add atrazine to Impact, you get a little bit of a synergy, a lift in performance. So when you think about problem weeds, glyphosate-resistant weeds, problem grasses, it just gives you an extra little boost in performance. So it's an easy-to-use product, premix, ready to go, and we're excited to be talking to growers about Impact Z use here in the coming season.
And you not only get that simplicity from the premix, but you've got a really broad application window for this.
Yeah, Impact has always had a broad application window. Impact Z does as well. You can go out there anytime from weed emergence up to 12-inch tall corn. You know, the nice thing is it doesn't matter whether you're growing conventional field corn, any hybrid, seed corn, sweet corn, popcorn. Impact Z has excellent crop safety across the board. It also has a lot of flexibility. So in many cases, you may want to add another residual herbicide, more atrazine. You may want to add a chlorosetamide like Harness or Dual Magnum. So you have the flexibility with Impact Z to mix and match those products you need to control the weed spectrum on your farm.
And take mix and save yourself a trip.
Absolutely.
All right. For growers finding out, want more about Impact Z and also how to save $3 an acre, where can they find it?
They can go to AMVACOffers.com or buy two, save three, and learn about how to combine our industry-leading insecticides with the new power of Impact Z.
All right, that's Jim Lappin of AMVAC, our sponsors today on this industry spotlight.
What do you think, sweets? Should I wear this dress or the green dress tonight? Oh, really? You thought the green one looked better? This is the green dress, I swear.
Your Farm Dog USA assistant won't be able to help your wife make intelligent fashion decisions. But he will be able to help around the farm by picking up drop tools, managing your herd, and opening latch gates. Learn more at farmdog.org. That's PHARMdog.org.
Hi, I'm Ag Day host Clinton Griffiths, and I invite you to join me each morning as we cover the nation's food system, from fields of green to orchards of orange and livestock everywhere in between. America runs on agriculture, and here at Ag Day, agriculture's what we do best. Listen as our analysts track the markets, learn about innovations in technology and sustainability, and live the country lifestyle through the eyes of rural America. Join me, Clinton Griffiths, for Ag Day, the country experience.
You know how to grow a great crop. We're here to help you grow profit. Now, back to AgriTalk After the Bell with Chip Florey.
Hey, welcome back to the Commodity Classic in Anaheim, California. We are live at the show down on the trade show floor. Thank you so much to AMVAC for making it possible for us to bring you the coverage from Commodity Classic this year. Just wrapped up a great conversation with Arlen Davis. You know how much I like talking to Arlen. Exactly. I mean, but, you know, with Arlen, it's really neat when you can sit down next to him and watch him as he's talking about these different things, because you can tell which items he thinks really matter, really matter to the market just by watching him and how he says things. Obviously, he's going to continue to talk about some of the other issues that are out there that yeah, we've got to keep track of. But when we were talking about that crush capacity, you know, I talked about it with Joe at the start of the show. We talked about it with Arlen. When we talked about it with that crush capacity, his eyes kind of lit up a little bit. And I think we're on to something here. I think
it's been a big topic of conversation, sort of. Well, maybe not big, but it's definitely been sprinkled through the ATB conversation through the last, what, 2-3 weeks?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Well, one of the reasons that I was doing that was because I was kind of floating some balloons out there trying to figure out if my theory on something was correct. So I've been writing an article or a column for Farm Journal. I want to just give you a little preview of what is coming in next month's issue. When you take a look at global supplies of soybeans, global supplies of soybean oil, and global supplies of soybean meal, and how they stack up against that year's use, we've got a very comfortable supply of soybeans out there around the world. It's like 29% stocks-to-use ratio. But when you look at soybean meal, when you look at bean oil, we're down around 5% on a stocks-to-use ratio. That is not a bearish situation. Matter of fact, that is a bullish situation at a 5% stocks to use. Well, if we've got that many beans left over, but we've got such tight supplies of soybean meal and soybean oil, it tells us that we can't crush enough. We can't crush enough here in the U.S. We can't crush enough in China. We can't crush enough in Argentina. We can't crush enough in Rotterdam. We can't crush enough anywhere right now to produce enough soybean meal and soybean oil to get to the level where we've got comfortable stocks left over at the end of the year of soybean meal and bean oil. If you're looking for a reason that this bean market has maybe outperformed everything else that's going on out there, those tight supplies of meal and oil left over at the end of the year and our lack of crush capacity could be the reason why. So you look at what has happened to the crush spread now. If we could keep this kind of crush spread around or crush margin around for a while, now we're talking about true market-driven incentives for the crushers to expand, for some investment in the crush industry. And wouldn't it be cool if somehow, some way around the world, we could come up with another 120 to 150 million bushels of bean demand from crushers, and that would change everybody's life, dude.
You're talking
it would change everybody's life.
Infrastructure expansion.
Yes, and I think that's what this soy complex needs. We've got to expand our capacity to crush. If we do that, all of a sudden our soybean meal, or excuse me, our soybean stocks to use ratio on a global basis is going to tighten up, and it's going to tighten up in a big way. I think this is the key. We've got to do everything that we can to encourage and incentivize through the market some expansion in the crush industry out there. I'm convinced of it more and more every day. You know what? Brian Grady probably told me this 10, 15 years ago, and I'm just remembering it now. He's always said, hey, if we've got more beans, we'll crush them.
Sure.
We'll crush them. Well, we've got more beans. I think we would crush them, but we don't have the capacity to do it. Maybe another 30, 40 million bushels of capacity to crush some beans, but that's about it, according to Arlen. So, hey, you know, one of the go ahead.
Well, no, I kind of want to change directions. Can we talk about the RFS for just 1 second? I saw something on Twitter that's got me freaked out. And I'm not here to shill for Senator Grassley, but at Chuck Grassley tweeted out, just left the White House meeting on the RFS. Same discussion again, no deal made. RFS program design destroyed by RIN cap or waiver. Not the win-win promised. Would destroy ethanol demand and make benefits of RVP useless. You and I know what all of those things mean. If you follow that thread after that tweet there are so many people tweeting out in this weird vitriol, why are you talking in abbreviations? What does any of this mean? I can't believe that we are this deep into the RFS discussion, into the biofuels discussion. Everybody thinks it's a good idea, and yet they're so unfamiliar with what the simple abbreviations mean. Renewable fuel standard, RIN, renewable, what is it, I can't think of it right off the top of my tongue. I'm getting so excited. But everybody's all upset at Grassley
renewable
for this.
Renewable identification number.
There you go. Renewable identification number, of course. Meanwhile, at Ethanol Bob, our friend Bob Dineen on White House meeting on RFS tweets, the oil narrative coming out of this is that there is a deal. He says there is no deal. This from Bob Dineen at Ethanol Bob.
Right. Right. And, you know, I think that's the bottom line. And that was the highlight from that tweet from Senator Grassley, too, that there is no deal, which means that the deal is the RFS as it has been written. We've been giving Scott Pruitt, EPA administrator, some fairly high marks when it comes to the RFS. Mm-hmm. I got to believe that he was sitting in that office in the White House looking at Ted Cruz and saying, listen, the way this thing is written is we've got to follow the rules of the RFS.
Right.
So,
right.
You know, I think the no deal is actually a good sign coming out of that meeting. I really do.
The response from the public, just real quickly, may just be that there needs to be a little bit more education on the very most basic level as to what some of this stuff means and what they're talking about, and I think we'd probably see greater acceptance by some of the naysayers.
Very good, very good. Give me two. Tweet of the day.
Today's tweets are brought to you by the Cowboy Way. All hat and no cattle makes Jake a dull boy. And now today's tweets at Coconut Rum. Y'all Twitter cowgirls are wild with these kids' names. I swear one of y'all is going to pop out a pair of twins and name them Riding Rank and Making Bank. And one more from at Rex Ralston. When your friends decide it will be a good idea to have a cattle drive down Main Street in Groover, Tejas. That's Texas to our friends here in Iowa. They've shut down traffic for the cattle. Now back to you.
Very good. All right. Thanks for listening today and every day. Thanks to Arlen Suderman for being here in Anaheim with me. Tomorrow on AgriTalk, Farmer Forum from the Commodity Classic. And tomorrow on ATB, Mark Gold from Top Third Ag Marketing. Have a great day, everybody.
The Climate Field View platform gives you the digital tools to uncover data-driven insights so you can make better farm management decisions and get the most out of every acre. To learn what Climate Field View can do for your operation, contact your local dealer or visit climate.com for more information. Climate Field View services provide estimates or recommendations and do not guarantee results. More information at www.climate.com/disclaimers.
Hey, Bill, any advice to control tough weeds and rootworms?
That's easy, Jim. Buy two, save three.
Wait, for weeds and rootworms?
Buy two, save three. Combine your Impact or new Impact Z herbicide purchase with a qualifying insecticide and save $3 per acre.
Buy two, save three. That is good advice.
For details, go to buy2save3.com. Impact, Impact Z, and Buy Two Save Three are trademarks owned by Amvac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow labels.